Listen, I don't know how I missed this, but I had this email in my junk mail that just got sent there. I don't know how it slipped through the cracks, but this is from BillGates07@AOL.com. It says, "Greetings. You have been gifted $5 million from Mr. Bill Gates. Contact me at this email for your claim."
Holy shit.
Yeah, man, I'm so lucky.
That's great. We don't have to ask for sponsors.
Isn't it crazy that Bill Gates is using AOL.com?
Well, no, I think that makes sense.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a bit obvious to use Hotmail, right?
Or what about like MSN? Or like, what is it now, Outlook.com?
Outlook, or I don't know, aren't they all
the same?
I think
Outlook's
a
little more professional.
Yeah. But I think if somebody was trying to hack your email, like half of hacking somebody's email is knowing what their email address is. And I think Bill Gates at Hotmail or Bill Gates at Outlook.com, that's sort of an easy guess. I don't think they'd expect him to be Bill Gates 07 at AOL.
This is interesting because, you know, like I think a lot of people would see this email and think it was some kind of scam or something like that. But there's, it says, "I hope this information meet you well, as I know you will be curious to know why/how I selected you to receive a sum of five." Oh, I don't really know. It looks like 5 million, but
they use a period instead of a comma.
Well, it could just be, you know, because Bill Gates is feeling international today that he uses the period instead of the comma.
Yeah.
But it's 5,000,000,000, which, you know, I feel like it's missing. It could have been a typo on his part. Our information below is 100% legitimate. Please see the link below. Because the information below.
He said it's legitimate.
Well, it is legitimate. Look at it. It's a HTTPS link to the English Wikipedia page
for
the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which I think was... correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was created specifically to send out emails to random podcasters in New York City to give $5 million to. That, I believe.
I don't think you should assume it's random.
Oh, you think I deserve this?
Yeah, I think probably. I mean, they do their research. This is Bill Gates. Like, he's a very intelligent guy. He's not just going to give his money away to some rando.
Well, here's the next paragraph. "I, Bill Gates, and my wife decided to donate the sum of $5 million to you as part of our charity project to improve the 10 lucky individuals." It doesn't even say lives. It just says project to improve the 10 lucky individuals all over the world from our $65 billion. I and my wife, there's no period there, mapped out to help people. Wow. "We prayed and searched all over the internet for assistance, and I saw your profile on Microsoft email owners list and picked you." That's crazy. Because, I mean, this is my Gmail account that emailed me. So I don't know. I just got to check. I should just be checking my junk mail a little more often, you know? I was so surprised.
Well, you know, I think last week they were playing Pay It Forward, the 2000 movie starring Kevin Spacey and Haley Joel Osment. They were playing that on TBS.
Disgraced Kevin Spacey.
I think he probably saw that movie and wanted to do something sort of like that.
Oh my God.
Because obviously you're not going to be able to use $5 million.
"Before we die, we decided to donate the remaining of our billions to the other individuals around the world in need." This is crazy.
Are they dying?
"We have just kept 30% of the entire sum to ourselves for the remaining days because I am no longer strong, am sick, and am writing you from hospital computer." Period.
The hospital's
no space.
Computer?
"And me and my wife will be traveling to Germany for treatment." This is terrible. How are they keeping this away from the public?
I don't know.
Is this... like, Bill and Melinda are both sick and they're going to Germany for treatment?
That's pretty sad.
I gotta tell somebody about this. I guess
someone should know.
This podcast, you guys heard it here first. Bill and Melinda are going to Germany for treatment.
I appreciate that you care more about their health than the amount of money that you're about to inherit.
I just don't understand.
This says a lot about your character, and I think that makes you deserving.
I'm not really aware. It says they kept 30% of the entire sum, which I think means the entire sum of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which I didn't know you could keep 30% of any charities for yourself. Mm-hmm. Is that like, that might be a new rule, I guess. But you know what? He needs it.
It's a pretty hefty sum.
Should I feel like I should just respond to this?
At least reply and say thank you.
Okay.
You know, this is, polite to not
this is from January 19th. It's like 2 weeks have gone by. You think he picked somebody else? Thank you.
I don't know, but I wouldn't wait any longer.
And then he said, remain blessed as he was signing off. Well, I just responded, so.
That's good.
We'll see how that goes. I'll update you next week if he writes back.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing more from your correspondence.
I can buy a lot with $5 million, man. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you could buy that building that you're living in.
And, I don't know that I could, actually. I think this building's like $20 million. That's not because it's a great building. That's just because it's New York City.
Right. Maybe you could buy just your floor and the floor above you and the floor below you. Just buy a little bit of the building.
I could buy my apartment for that point. So I told you they're selling the building, and they sold the building, and they like our landlord reached out to us and was like, hey, we'll knock $200 off your rent if you just let some Brazilian like architects or whatever or designers come into your apartment and just take a look and see what they did, because ours is one of the more recently renovated ones, which is why we're not rent controlled. And and they're like, oh, you have to be ready at 11 o'clock on Monday or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm working at 12. So I have to, you know, I can't be here at 11 o'clock. And Aaron's like, oh, can you just do it for me? And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. So, you know, I switched my shift with a coworker. I work. So I moved my shift from 12 to 1 instead. And, just so I can be here at 11 o'clock when they show up. So I'm sitting here just editing and, you know, 11 goes by, 11:15, 11:30, 11:45 happens. And nobody's there. And I'm texting him, like, I have to leave for work. I need to be there. It takes me like almost an hour to get to work. I need to be there. Mm-hmm. And she's like, all right, I guess you're going to have to go then. I'm sorry. Like the guy, they said they'll be there in 10 minutes. I'm like, there's nothing in my mind that makes me think if they're 45 minutes late, they're going to be another 10 minutes. There's no reason why I would believe that. And so like before I leave, I have to take Olivia out for a walk. So I put her leash on, I put her little coat on, and I walk outside, and as I'm walking out of my front door to my apartment building, there's like a group of like seven. You can't say they look Brazilian, but they just look like, you know, and they don't look like tourists either because they're well dressed, and everybody's well dressed in New York except for me. And there's just these like seven people, and I just walked right by them and just like took the dog out for a pee. They have no idea who I am. I walk back in after the walk, and I take the elevator to my floor, and I get out of the elevator, and the seven Brazilian people. This is probably like two or three guys and two women and then some other dude are all just looking confused, standing outside, not exactly outside my door, but like in the hallway, mulling around the elevator, kind of like being like, where are they? I don't know. And I unlock my door, and I don't even turn to look at them as I'm unlocking my door. I go inside my apartment. I close the door again, and I lock it. And I heard, like, as I was opening my door, I heard, like, oh, okay, there he is. And I just didn't even bother interacting with them. I close my door, and, you know, I'm taking Olivia's coat off, getting her ready, setting up the couch, you know, so she can't jump on it while I'm away. And then I have I hear a knock at the door, and you know, like I open the door, and it's one of the brokers, I guess. I don't really know exactly what his role was at this place, but yeah, he's like, hey, you know, so and so told me that you'd be ready to show the apartment. I look at him dead in the eye. I'm just like, listen, you told me you were going to be here at 11 o'clock. It is now 11:58, and I have to leave for work now. I'm sorry. He's like, 2 minutes. All I need is 2 minutes. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I could be the biggest dick in the world right now and just say no. And I just like walk out and close and lock the door. But I'm like, in my head, I'm like, $200 for 2 minutes. You know, it's $100 a minute that I'm going to get paid here.
That's a good rate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get to keep it all because, you know, Aaron and I split the rent. But you know, like in essence, I'm saving Aaron and I $100 a minute. It's probably the most, you know, I'll ever make in my life. And as far as an hourly rate goes.
Right.
And, yeah, so I let them in. They walked around with their shoes on after stepping in the shit-filled streets of New York for a few minutes. They're very nice, expensive-looking shoes, so I was very upset about that. And they walk into the apartment, and they're like, this is a one room? And I'm like, and I show them the bedroom, and they start poking at my closets, and they're like, is that a bathroom? And I just like, yes, that is a bathroom. We do have a bathroom in this apartment. I don't know. These are the people that are going to be making my life hell for the next 2 years. So I figured I could just make fun of them while they're in my apartment, figuring out how much to raise the rent or how they're going to kick me out, how they're going to make my life hell, essentially. So that was my adventure on Monday morning.
Man. Yeah, that's a hassle. I would hate to deal with all that. We have new neighbors.
Ooh, the downstairs one? They cleaned that place up?
Yeah. I haven't really had the chance to talk to them, and I haven't seen my landlords in months. It's been very cold, and they're probably all shacked up, which is fine.
I think the mold died.
Although I had a dream last night that he was mowing the lawn. Like
in the winter?
In the winter, yeah. It was hilarious. But yeah, we have new folks. It's a really weird scenario down there. I'm not really sure what the situation is, because there are like three different cars that I see on rotation in our little parking area, and they're only ever there one at a time. There's never two cars from the people downstairs. There's only one car, but there's three different cars. So it's really confusing. I don't understand that situation. Usually it's the one white Jeep, which is basically the same model car that I wanted to buy for myself, which is fun to look at every day. But because it's been so cold, we haven't actually had like the opportunity to bump into each other really. I went and shoveled the driveway last week, and I was able to say hello as they're on their way out to work, and they thanked me for shoveling the driveway and everything, which is nice. But yeah, we have new neighbors, and occasionally there are children, and they're quite noisy. And I think there's like an older teen, and he's very noisy. He listens to his rap music very loud. But apart from that, they seem okay. But it is an adjustment having people downstairs. I have to like stomp less hard on the second floor, and got to try to keep the dog a little more chill when she's running across the linoleum and stuff. But yeah.
We have some neighbor drama going on in our apartment too. It's craziness.
As a result of the buyout, or?
Well, there's a lot of like neighborly discussion, like looking out for each other kind of stuff going on. So it's not the drama part of it. The drama part of it is like, I have like my neighbors are all mad at each other because they're all very loud, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they're all pointing fingers at each other, and nobody can really figure it out. I mean, we figured it out. Aaron was like kept up last night by my neighbor watching TV from like 2 to 4 a.m. And like apparently just like large loud banging noises every so often, so we really don't know how that goes on. But it I'm sure it'll all work out. One of us will move at some point.
yeah you're all just holding out.
Just keeping our fingers crossed. I don't know. It's tough to take sides because I sleep like a log, and like Aaron, you know, wakes up at the sound of a pin dropping, and so I'll wake up and she'll be like, "Did you hear that? Did you hear all that last night?" I was like, "Aaron, I have no idea what that was. I don't know what it was. I was sleeping very soundly until we woke up."
The tiniest noise will prevent me from falling asleep for hours, but the largest noise could not possibly wake me up from my slumber.
It's so weird. Oh, I wonder what it would be. What would it have to be to wake me up? I'm trying to think of like something loud. Like, something fell over. Like one of Aaron's backpacks fell off a stand, or like off of like a huge bag of laundry fell off of Olivia's kennel in the middle of the night, and like it barely registered. I like was kind of like, huh? And Aaron was like, you know, wired, like shot up straight, and Ben's like, "Why is that?" And I'm just like, "What was that?" Like I would be the first to go in any emergency.
Yeah.
Evaporated immediately.
It's the light that will somewhat wake me up, and of course, like, you know, that's natural, right? You're supposed to wake up with the light, but I don't. Like today I woke up and saw your text saying, "Hey, do you want to record this afternoon?" I saw that like 2 hours late because I was still sleeping. But it's earlier this week. I don't understand this. Like, I don't know what happened, but it was before the light. It was starting to get a little light out. May was getting up and ready for work pretty early in the morning. And I turned over after she got out of the bed because there was room there and I had the dog at my feet. So I was like, leg space. So I rolled over, but I swear, like it was another few seconds before I heard this loud clattering right behind my head. And I have a bedside table on my side that has a little stand where it has like a, you know, one of those like vertical Apple Watch chargers. You just kind of stick it on there and it charges up. And then there's a spot where you can put your phone and you can plug it in there. So I have one of those on my bedside table with a lamp as well. And something like pulled them completely off of the stand and I don't know how this would happen. I mean, it's difficult to describe unless you see the situation, but there's nothing that would have knocked it off. Like, the pillows weren't, you know, on top of it. I didn't, like, pull the pillows and the thing came with it. That didn't seem to happen. The only thing that I could think of was something pulled the cord that was plugged into the wall or plugged into the power strip under our bed, and I have no idea what it would have done it, but it scared the hell out of me for multiple reasons. One, it's a very loud noise very quickly. Two, I don't know what caused it. And three, two very expensive electronic items just flew off and landed somewhere behind my bed. And so it's always that scramble. It's like, oh my God, you have to find it. And the whole time you're thinking it's broken. The screen shattered, you know, so it sucks, but yeah. So
what was it? There's still a mystery?
Yeah, it's still a mystery. I have no idea. Like,
the dog? Nothing?
No. The dog stays in the morning lately because it's been so cold. The dog doesn't even wake up with May. She stays in bed with me, and she just gets more snuggly because there's only one source of heat. And then she wakes up with me and goes outside then. So it wasn't the dog. I don't know. I can't prove that it was May. And she doesn't like that I'm blaming her for it. But I don't know what it was because I was sleeping. And whatever happened behind my back. So I don't know. It could be ghosts. There have been a lot of weird noises lately, and I always assume that they're the squirrels in the walls, but now I'm not so sure.
The squirrels in the walls. Good Lord.
Yeah. So, sorry I didn't get back to you sooner. I was up very late last night playing Alien Isolation.
Didn't you tweet about it or something?
I did, because it's frustrating, man. This game is hard. Like, I know I'm bad at video
games.
Was
that screenshot that you
that
posted
was not
a GIF?
Mine.
That
was that not
wasn't
mine,
yours. But, yeah, that's horrible.
But that's the animation that happens in the game. Like, that,
yeah,
that,
this terrible.
That was what was happening to me.
I never want to play that game ever.
GIF. Yeah.
So for listeners' reference, the GIF that Jacob posted on Twitter, which you can see at his Twitter, at Jacob Tender, is just, you know, him venting his frustration about being stuck in a certain spot in this game, which I'm sure you'll describe in a second for us. But the animation that we're seeing is, I don't know what's going on beforehand, but suddenly you're in first person view and you're in this, you know, spaceship thing. You look down and it's my nightmare from like one or two episodes ago where you've just been impaled by the alien tail and it's slowly pushing through your chest and you're looking down on it. And then the alien's hand, I think, comes in front of your face at the same time, like right afterwards. So
yeah, like right
just
after.
My literal nightmare from the age of 6 years old and on present in this. Thanks
it's,
for that.
It's
Jake.
Great. Like there's a bunch of different animations for the kill. Like, I don't know many total, but depending on what angle he gets you from, you know, if he comes up from behind you, which was rare earlier in the game, but is happening more now. He just comes up like out of nowhere, you know, you look down and his tail is just completely through you, and then he pulls it out and then his hand comes down and he grabs you. It's becoming more prevalent now because there's more actions that I need to take in the game. Like, obviously this far into the game, I think I'm like probably 3/4 of the way through. They expect you to know the basic mechanics, how to, you know, the different puzzles that you have to get through. So now they're just going to like speed it up and they're going to make it more challenging by sending more enemies your way and making the alien appear more often. And so now I've this entire game, I've been trying to like, I've been waiting to get a hold of these cutters. Like, there's a gas cutter, there's the plasma cutter, and these are all upgrades for this little gas powered you know, heat cutter that you can use to get through certain panels or certain doors. And throughout the entire game, there are doors that you can't get through because you don't have this tool. So you're like, okay, well, I'll get one at some point and that'll help me get, you know, more items and more upgrades and all these different things that'll help you in the game. But it doesn't come until you're 3/4 of the way through the game. And then you have it and you're like, awesome. Now, am I even going to be able to use this on all these other doors? Like, I imagine that there's a bunch of like achievements associated with leaving the course of the current campaign to go open doors that you saw at the very beginning that you couldn't get to before. I don't know that for sure, but so now that you have this tool, you're really excited. You're like, okay, cool, there's more stuff that I can get to now. But to use the cutter on the door, it requires like your focus, and it requires you to do, you know, like one of those actions where you have to hold two buttons and then you have to move the joystick one way or the other. And while you're doing this, obviously you can't be holding your flamethrower and looking behind you. So you have to make sure that you have enough time.
Of course, you can't be holding that flamethrower.
You have to make sure you have enough time to cut through the door. And so, you know, knowing how video games work, like the meta strategy for this is to wait until the bad guy comes, make sure that you fend him off and send him back into the vents with your flamethrower, which will give you the maximum possible time to open the door, right? Because it basically just resets like a time, like an in-game timer, which will go off at some point, and then the alien will come back and you'll have to fight him off again or hide or whatever. So that was my strat. That's been my strategy. Or it was my strategy before I quit the game last night at 3:30 a.m. because I just couldn't get through this door. Like, I got an upgrade to my fusion cutter or my plasma cutter. I cut through the panel. I waited. He came. I sent him away. And then I'm like pulling the lever to open it again. And he comes back and he skewers me. And there's nothing you can do because you can't, like, while you're in the middle of the thing, even if you were able to abort the action of opening the door, you can't abort, take out your gun, aim it, and then send it at him. It's impossible. So I don't know. It's really frustrating and I don't know what to do about it. And I've been noticing like there are like glitches too with like how the alien appears, because the alien's only supposed to be able to like either come through doors or come down through vents. And I know that, you know, the game can like randomly generate where this guy is going to appear. That's how, you know, it makes the game like challenging. But I thought that it was supposed to just use known points of entry. And so I knew this one spot of the game that I keep getting stuck out because I keep getting killed and I have to keep running through. Like, it's the same, you know, Groundhog Day scenario in this one part of the game. I know where the alien comes from. So I waited in a different spot, and then the same noise was made, alerting the alien to come to that area. And the alien comes, but this time he dropped from the ground behind me. And so I'm like, oh man, I didn't know there was a vent back there. So on the next Groundhog Day, I look through and there's no vent there. He literally just dropped from a random part of the ceiling to kill me. It's BS. It's so frustrating. It's challenging.
That was going to be my question. Is this, does this game cheat in the sense that, like,
yeah, I think it does.
Like, does the alien teleport, you know, in a way that it couldn't in real life to come and kill you, you know?
I take a lot of screenshots, and I think there is a way to, like, to pull, like, a recording of the last, you know, several seconds or last minute of the game. I think I maybe just have to hold that button for an extra minute, and I wish I would have done this. But last night, I'm going through this pretty challenging part where you're trying to trap the alien in a certain part of the ship, and you're going through all these levels and you're locking down all these areas. And every time you lock it down, he gets pissed off and he comes looking for you. And so, you know, I'm aware of this. I shut down the one part and I go find like a spot to hide out for a second. And, I see him come down from a vent. He's like looking around. He doesn't see anything. He jumps back up into the vent, and I'm seriously, within 2 seconds, he comes through the door that's right, like, on the wall right next to the vent. like, there's no way that would have even been physically possible if that vent came through just on the other side of the wall. So, yeah, I think the game is a little glitchy in that way. I'm not really sure how those mechanics work fully, but it's not to my advantage. That's for sure.
So. Dang. So you're still, like, what percentage of the way you done through this game?
I'm on chapter 8. I don't know for sure how many there are, but like I said, I think I'm 3/4 of the way through at least. I'm getting close to the end.
Wow.
Yeah. It's only taken me so many years. but it's fun. It's a really good game. Like, it is, it's scary and I don't know, like, the graphics
scary,
are great
and scary. It's also
the ships
scary
are cool.
By the way, is it scary? It sounds scary.
It's pretty scary. It gets scarier as it goes on too, because when you're shutting stuff down, the lights go off, and so then you got to use your battery.
Ooh,
power
spooky.
And you're walking around with the light from your flamethrower, which you finally get, and you get to use, like, you don't have to hide as much anymore, which is kind of nice, but it only means that the alien wants to kill you more, which means he shows up more often.
It doesn't matter in a video game if I get, like, the strongest weapon in the game to, like, defend myself. I'm still going to cower in fear if the alien shows up and start running like a baby. Like, it just, mm-hmm. it's, It's too scary.
Well, you can't run. You can't run. Because when you run, it makes more noise, and then...
But it already knows where you are. Once it sees you.
No, not necessarily. It kind of patrols. Like, it'll respond to noises, and it kind of just it patrols around. So you could get lucky, and it could be elsewhere, and you may not run into it through, you know, an entire section of the game.
Oh.
But then if you make a noise, or if you choose to use your gun instead of sneaking around somebody or sneaking up behind them and hitting them with your wrench or whatever, that noise will alert it and it'll come your way. If you can crouch and sneak around, and that'll get you by a lot more quietly, but obviously a lot more slowly. Like, there's strategy to it, and I guess almost less strategy because of the flamethrower, but there are different strategies that you have to implement because of how often it's going to come, especially when you're just trying to open a goddamn door. And the door that I'm getting through, we're trying to get through, I don't think is necessarily the door that it wants me to go through right now, but it's the one I want to go through right now, because the one that I think the game wants me to go through right now has an android on the other side, and I've only successfully killed one of them, and it took 5 headshots. So I don't really know what to do once I get through that door.
How do you kill an android without alerting the alien?
That's the thing. And it's hard. And I think I'm going to have to try a stun baton. I think that might be the way that I go about it, because I haven't tried that yet. I haven't used a stun baton yet in the game.
Oh, really? Okay. I remember that from my read-throughs and not playthroughs, but when I was watching clips of it and like reviews of it, they're talking about how frustrating the androids are to kill.
They really are. And if that's the way to go about it, that's great. I generally just try to avoid them. And there's the only one that I killed was in a part of the game that he had, like, I had to kill him. Like, it wouldn't let me progress through the game unless I took him out. So I just had to keep running around this room, filling up my revolver with ammunition, and I missed a lot. But I did shoot him in the head, like, or at least close to the head, like 5 times, and that finally took him down. But yeah, those actually, I think I said this before, they actually scare me more than the alien. Like, I know what the alien's going to do, and I know what the android's going to do, but I know that I just need to avoid the alien, and I pretty much know how to do that. The androids are somehow trickier. Like, they, as soon as they see you, they just come after you, and they may be slower and they may not like chase after you and stuff, but if you only have so many different directions you can go, it's really hard to get around them.
But no sir, no thank you.
There was one part of the game that I saw last night that I thought you would really enjoy, because it's the Alien Isolation game is the story of Ellen Ripley's daughter Amanda. Who has her own run-in with the alien, because, you know, small universe. And there's this one part where she's interrogating this guy that's being kept in a jail cell. And the guy tells her basically the story of what happened on the Nostromo. And the game does that by allowing you to play as, I think you're playing as Dallas.
Oh, cool. Like in the vents?
No, like entering the alien ship, the derelict.
Oh.
Yeah. So you actually get to, it just takes you to this different mode where you are presumably Dallas, and you're walking out into, like, out from the Nostromo onto the planet, and you're trying to find your way to the source of, you know, this energy reading. And there's little puzzles you have to do. It's like a straightforward, you know, you're just walking from point A to point B, and there's like a couple of things that you have to do along the way. But you eventually get to the ship, and you get to walk in it and like walk through the cool, like, you know, grimy, oily hallways and out into the main, like navigation room where, you know, the big, what's the guy called? The engineer?
Oh yeah. From Prometheus.
Well, sure, but even in Alien, like, where there's the guy, the jockey.
Space jockey.
The space jockey, yeah. The space jockey's sitting there, and it's massive, and, like, you get to walk around that room and look around, and it's incredible, and you get to, like, walk up to the space jockey, and so that's awesome. And then you go turn off the beacon, and then the last part of that little side mission is you're lowered down on the winch into the holding bay for all of the alien eggs, and that's where the scene ends. But it's really cool because you get to actually walk around that ship. It's not like a huge map or anything, but you know, just like being able to walk up to the space jockey was really cool. It looked awesome.
That's a very interesting way to like into, because when you, for as far as like a gameplay thing, like to put in a flashback in a first person shooter or a first person strategy, I don't know what you call this game, first person horror survival, because you essentially, I think about like Half-Life, you know, that's like the quintessential first person shooter. And you know, like you can't, like there's a couple moments where like you'll lose consciousness as a character or something like that, or get teleported instantly, but it's mostly real time. There's no like flashbacks or anything that happen. There's some surreal sequences in Half-Life 2 at the opening and the closing, but for the most part you're on a rail and linear time progression. I think BioShock has a couple flashes backwards or forwards, I forget really, but they use time travel to their advantage in that game. To make it semi-linear, but like, yeah, to suddenly like change to keep the same perspective visually, but to jump back in time, that's an interesting hurdle to come up with in like the gameplay design of something, to like, because you want it to be, because like the whole thing about that game is like immersion, and you know, like wearing, you know, headphones to make the stereo thing really pop and how scary it can be. And then suddenly if you like how do they introduce you to that scene or side mission or whatever you call it,
you're interrogating a guy that they have in a holding cell, and
it's like fade to
basically
black.
Basically, it's just like, I'm the daughter of Ellen Ripley. I want you to tell me everything. Mm-hmm. And so he tells you that part, and then it comes back, and he's like, if you want to know more, you're gonna have to let me out. And then she goes on her next mission to trap the alien.
Oh, but like you said, you get to walk around that thing. So when he's talking, how does it literally transition visually to you? Like, does it shimmer into the past, or like, am I missing something here?
No, like it just fades out. Like you don't actually hear, like he's not actually telling you anything. You're just put in the position of Dallas, and you're walking with Kane and what's the gal's name that went with him? The three that left the Nostromo to go check out the source, you're just in their shoes. There's no narration. Like you're just playing as them. Like they're talking to each other.
Right. So, but there's no cutscene or anything like that. There's no. It just, you're suddenly in one place and then you're in another.
The only cutscene is that there's two cutscenes. There's one when you're turning off the beacon. You like touch the thing and it turns off. That's a very quick cutscene. And then you walk back to the main room. You go down the winch, which is all like player handled. You're just going down though. It's basically a cutscene. And then once you get down to the bottom and you walk towards the, you know, the glowing blue mist. Basically, once you walk into that, it does a quick cutscene where it basically does an animated version of the scene where they open up the egg and she goes to touch it, or he goes to touch it, and Kane's face hugged.
No thanks.
It's really cool though. I'm having fun with the game. I'm hoping to finish it soon. I've been trying to get my homework done faster so that I can get to it. And this week was great because my class was canceled yesterday, so I was able to spend the day
cold.
Getting it done.
It's
so
too
cold.
Cold.
So cold.
It's very cold. Not as cold here, but it's still cold.
Yesterday it was something like felt like negative 20 something.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's real bad. It's
all bad.
It's bad for the doggy. I feel bad for the doggy. I don't have to leave the house to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, Jazz, you need to be quick. And she's slipping around. She's got nowhere she can. Well, she does have a place where she can stand. The other day I did shovel out a spot for her, knowing full well that this was coming. And she just refuses to use it. Like, there's a patch of grass that she could use, but she'd much rather walk across the frozen tundra of our backyard.
Dogs gonna be dogs.
Yeah.
Olivia's got the idea now. She knows that, like, it's cold outside. The sooner she pees, the sooner she comes back inside. So
right.
like she doesn't dilly-dally as much anymore. Like, when it's warm out, she'll dilly-dally forever. She can focus more when it's cold out because there's like only one stimulus that's bothering her. Whereas when it's warm out, there's multiple stimulus depending on what's near her at any given time.
Yeah. Yeah. Jazz, I don't know if, I don't know if she goes out there with the intention of being faster, but once she's out there and she's been doing her business, like it only takes like 2 minutes. Like I went out and picked up, our trash bin, which blown over, I guess the trash guys got a day off because it was so cold. But our trash blew over, so I had to go pick up a bunch of trash from my front yard and other people's front yards and toss it back into the bin. And I was out there for at most 3 minutes. And I came inside, my hands were completely red, and like they couldn't move. It was really bad. And
do you have bad circulation?
Well, I have long arms, so yeah, kind of.
That's the factor.
Well, you know, they're further away from the heart, and I don't have like as much fat to insulate myself and keep me warm. So, yeah, I guess I probably have pretty bad circulation.
My fingertips turn blue in the cold.
Oh God, that's very so scary.
Bad circulation. Yeah, I have cold hands all the time. My fingertips turn blue. Hurts very much.
Yeah,
I had a late session last night with this new show I'm doing, and they closed the L train in Brooklyn. So I had to walk like 10 minutes from the apartment that we recorded at and then walk to the train and then get to the down to the train with my gear bag and everything. And the guy's like, no train, go back upstairs and wait for the shuttle bus. And I'm like, fuck. So, you know, I'm just on a corner for 10 minutes. And I think last night it was like probably feels like, you know, like 5 degrees or something like that. Yeah. Just standing outside with my mittens. Like I'm sitting there cause I have glittens, you know, like mitten gloves.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fold over the mitten part over your fingers. And the thumbs have a hole too. Cause you know, it's the 21st century. We need a text. So I was just basically, I put my glittens up to my mouth and take the little opening and then just go and like blow into there. And
you know, that's actually, it's worse to do that. You know that, right?
No, I didn't know that. Why is that? Cause
The moisture will freeze. It's the same reason why if you're doing any cold weather camping, you don't want it. It's natural to want to like curl up in a ball inside your sleeping bag and bring your head in because it's warmer that way. But it's actually worse because the breath has so much moisture in it that when the cold air comes through, it can actually crystallize and freeze.
I wonder if it's those things, like one of those things like licking your lips or something where it feels good for the instant, but in the long run, you're doing more damage. Because I warmed up my hands that way and it felt good. You know,
it's a momentary pleasure, but...
Yeah, well, as long as I keep doing it and the bus comes, then eventually like, it won't give it... the moisture won't have time to freeze. Like, it was like a back and forth thing. Like, I'd blow on one hand for a while and into the mitten, and then I'd switch the other hand, warm that one up, and go back and forth. But yeah, if the moisture was, you know, like crystallizing or something like that, well, you know, maybe it's just like licking your lips.
Yeah, you're better off to put your hands like in your armpits or even
crotch.
Yeah,
that's what my dad's
style.
Move, dude. Yeah. That was so when I was a kid, my brother played football. I did not.
Yeah.
And my dad would be on the sidelines, you know, watching or something like that. And and you know, it's like a football game, so there's like, you know, hundreds of people standing around. And I don't know. I guess I can't standing up and demonstrating it now is not going to do any good because I'm literally the only person in this room. So I guess I'll just describe it for you and all the listeners, but my dad, and I don't know why the second half is necessary, but he would take one, he would do one hand at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Which
and
he'd
just take one hand and put it in between his legs and the other one would be kind of like stretched up in the air. And then he would just take turns doing one hand at a time in between his legs. And it was a really weird thing to watch.
Yeah.
I think armpits would have been a more natural thing, but
yeah.
And like if I was just like looking at him weird, I'd be like, this is not like, you're not in the stands, you're not like blending in with anything. He's standing on the sidelines amongst, you know, like, you know, five or six other dads, a bunch of like kids, and like the audience is just looking down on you. Like the bleachers are looking down onto this man who's just standing there with his hand in between his legs.
You felt like that because he's your dad, but in reality, they're all
looking
down on the players who are all doing the same thing, albeit probably with both hands at the same time.
The players are not doing that. The players are playing or whatever, you know, like they're
not. But when they're standing around, like anytime you go to a wintertime sporting event and in any sort of future, just look at the guy standing on the sidelines. They all have their hands in their crotch or they have hot hands, which is nice. But if they don't, their hands are
hand warmers. I think they just have hand warmers.
Yeah, some of them do. When I played soccer, we all did that. We all had to because we're all in the field and our hands are freaking freezing. And yeah, it's just what you do. Now, if you're a dad on the sideline, I think it's okay to do that. If you don't have hand warmers,
it's okay
to do that.
Football league.
But you should do both hands at the same time. Otherwise,
right.
It just doesn't look right.
Just get some gloves. Stop playing football in the winter. Stop playing cold weather sports. Get out of town.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's whenever I think of that. I just think of my dad turning me going, so it's the warmest place in your body. You know, it's the warmest place in your body, Michael, all right?
It's not wrong. Not wrong.
I don't know why I give him a New York accent. He's a Boston accent. He's like, it's the warmest place in your body, Mike. Like that's more what it was like. The longer I spend in New York, the more time I spend here, the more that any impression I do of my family becomes New York, even though my family's definitely not from, well, my mom is, but she doesn't have an accent anymore. Mm. It's, I don't know. Do I have a New York accent? Can you hear it?
I don't know. Maybe like very, very slightly, but
I get very worried that it's creeping
in. You also
in.
Don't have like a Boston accent. Like you know, I don't think you have a very
strong
accent.
Oh, dude,
I do. You sound East Coast, but you don't sound very specifically...
Yeah, yours is pretty neutral too. If I have to say it, like I don't pick up on any of the Ohio stuff that I normally hear from.
Wait,
people.
Wait, what Ohio said, stuff?
Like you know, like the it's like kind of like the mixed in with the Rochester thing. The Rochester, that's kind of like the Rochester accent. You talk like this.
Yeah, but what's the Ohio accent? Ohio,
I think
I've always heard that Ohio is the most like baseline no accent.
I imagine people who grow up closer to Rochester and Buffalo have the upstate New York accent. Whereas, and this is with no scientific evidence, I'm sure there's a map of everything that I'm talking about here, and there's actually definitive, you know, accents in certain areas. But in my mind, I would imagine if you grew up in like Northeast Ohio, you would have more of a New York thing. And in my head, the entire state is more like that in my head, in the same way that somebody from Boston would have, you know, like a Boston accent.
I'm pretty sure Fred Armisen skipped my state when doing his tour of accents, but there, I don't know. Like there are sections of Northeastern Ohio that do have accents, which is really strange. Like if you're in Cleveland, there might be some of what you're talking about, kind of like that. Not quite New York, but maybe like Rochester. I don't know. I'm not like familiar. But kind of has that feel to it. But there's this one place in Ohio in like the greater Cleveland area that's called Parma.
I've heard of Parma.
And Parma has an accent, which is the weirdest thing.
What is Parma's accent? Can you
like,
do it?
I'll talk to somebody and I'll know because they'll just be talking it. It's the way that it's like it's almost like a nasally like, oh, you're from Parma. Parma.
Parma.
Parma. It's Parma. It's just a known thing around here. Like I can tell, I'm like, oh, you're from Parma, right?
And they're like, and that's Northeast Ohio?
Yeah, but it's just one specific town in a greater Cleveland metropolitan area. Like it's just one section of this greater city, and they all sound like that. And I don't even know like what it is. I don't know what they're like.
Well, maybe it's like, the only city in the area that has that specific like arrangement of letters and demands that kind of vowel set. Maybe you all talk like that all the time, like Parmesan. Like how do you say it? Do you say Parmesan?
Parmesan.
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 I don't know. I mean, there's always like those local colloquialisms and like the way that you say certain things, like in Worcester, you know, it's Worcester, not Wooster.
Yeah. Well, you also spell it W-O-O-S-T-R, not like us fine Boston folk. We spell it W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R. Worcester. Worcester. It's just Worcester.
I know. And it's confusing because in Ohio, they recycle names all over the place. So in Bowling Green, there is a Wooster Street.
I have a Bowling
spelled
Green.
Exactly like everybody has a Bowling Green, Mike.
I don't know. I mean, it's just the last stop like, in Manhattan on my train, you know?
It's second to Springfield. Everyone has a Springfield. Almost everyone has a
Springfield.
Bowling Green. Exactly. So it's a weird thing because no matter where you go in Worcester or in Ohio, you could be saying something wrong because where you're from, you say it this one way. And in here, they're very adamant that you say it this other way. Like, we have Bell Street. How do you think Bell Street is spelled?
Well, I don't know. It could be B-E-L-L-E, like French, or it could be B-E-L-L.
Well, it's closer to the French. Yeah. It's different.
It's not. What is it?
It's B-E-A-L-L-E.
That's stupid. Get out.
It's Beal.
It's Beal. Yeah. It's like Houston here in New York. Like Houston Street is H-O-U-S-T-O-N, which Houston. Is just... Right, but if you say Houston Street, you will get laughed out of Manhattan. You will be chased out of here over some bridge or tunnel, like or through some tunnel. Like that's what happens if you say Houston Street here. You immediately indicate where you're from and that you're not from here.
Yeah, that's fun. I don't know though. Like I would love to hear more about this this Ohio accent that you think that people
well,
have,
it's just a it's just an ignorant stereotype in my head.
Yeah, but that's a weird thing because I've never ever heard anybody stereotype Ohio accents because I've never like I've always heard from people who I meet from other places say that Ohioans don't have an accent. And I'm like, what? Okay, maybe I believe that, but also what does that mean? Because if we talk differently than everybody else because they have an accent, what does that mean? Doesn't that mean we have an accent? But, you know.
Well, it's all relative. I mean, like, you know, English people think we all have accents, and
sure.
But, like, we sound normal. Like, if an Ohio person's accent sounds normal to me, then I think it's going to be. But the same way for, like, a Southern person. Like, a Southern person's accent is normal to them, so everybody else has an accent and not them. You know, it's like, you can be self-aware of what, in the grand scheme of life or mm-hmm. of, like, human society, your accent is, but, you know, yours is going to be the normal way of doing things. Like, you're not going to recognize yourself as an outsider unless you are transplanted into some place where you are clearly the outsider.
Mm. Well, yeah, I'm sure I've got something, and I'll never know. Like, it's...
The Boston thing comes out if I'm talking to somebody with a Boston accent, but I think that that's just, like, a bad character trait of mine, is that I have a hard time not, like, imitating somebody else's voice if I'm talking to them. I don't know if it's, like, a desire to be liked or to be... But it definitely does not work. It doesn't make me liked, but it's, like, I'm, like, trying to blend in conversation or something like that. But I'll definitely bring out the Boston accent whenever I'm talking to somebody with one.
I mean, I can hear it in you. Like, it's more of a... It's more of your delivery of the sentence rather than particular words. Like, the... I don't think that your vowels are as pronounced, but the way that you deliver your sentence, like, your cadence does feel very Boston at certain points.
We were trying to figure out, there's like so many weird things about the Boston accent. Like, you know, you drop the R essentially, like Harvard, like Harvard is Harvard, you know, that's mm-hmm. how we say it there. But then we just add R's in other places. Like all of my Boston relatives, if you ask them, most of them are Irish. I got a couple Italians, like Irish and Italian. I'm all Italian, but I have some Irish in the family that married in. And their way of saying pasta, you know, they'll say pastor, and I'm like, what?
Yeah,
like, it's like if you spelled it on paper, what they're saying is p-a-s-t-e-r, like paster, but like pastor, right. So it's a, oh yeah, let's go get some pastor, I will, you know, it's like it's pasta.
Why
it's
are just, r's the thing that people add? Because that my well, grandparents
it's
just
that
thing.
Word, I don't know why. Oh. My and like the word cuckies, like my, you know, khaki jeans, like the khakis, yeah. You know, like khakis, yeah. Are pants, you know, like my dad says cuckies, and he grew up in Boston. Yeah, it's cuckies. Cuckies.
Well, that's not right.
Oh, that I wrote the word car keys down, and then I wrote the word khakis, and he said them. I said, okay, I said, read this, and he goes, okay, khakis, and I go, okay, now read this, and he goes, khakis.
I'm surprised that they don't just like say DACAs.
You know,
people like call tissues Kleenex, like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would think
Dockers is a brand, I guess. It's, yeah. But it's not like, I don't know. We wouldn't call them by their name.
I don't know. Like I always grew up like before I knew that like khaki was just the sort of like color, because it's not even necessarily like the material. Like, it could be anything. But I always heard that khakis, those were like dress pants, you know. But they were always, you know, it was like Dockers, put on Dockers, and they weren't like Docker brand. They were Kmart brand. But you knew what people meant.
I guess Dockers makes too much. I understand that, you know. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the Boston equivalent of that. Like, I guess it's, you know, like Xerox or Kleenex or Velcro or whatever, sure. You know. Yeah. Oh, man. I love accents. It's one of my favorite things. I you know, like, all of those, what's it, technique critiques? I forget who does it on, I think it's Wired or somebody on YouTube. But if you're into accents, definitely go search technique critique on YouTube, and you'll find this guy who's like he's a dialect coach for actors, and he just basically the publication isolated a bunch of or took a bunch of examples from different movies and TV shows and said, okay, now, you know, tell us how this actor is doing this right or wrong. And, you know, he'll go through some of the worst accents, which is just like, what's the guy's name, Dick Van Dyke from from Mary Poppins or whatever, when he does like, that's like one of the most notoriously bad accents in the world. And then like you have some of the best accents in the world, like Daniel Day-Lewis doing his accents, which is like incredible. But he really breaks it down into like the placement. He'll say like, okay, so this technique that your tongue is doing when you're talking with this accent is this, and it's because you are your S's are being said with your tongue touching the roof of your mouth as opposed to on the top of your teeth or something. And if you actually try the stuff he says to do, it's amazing, because like, you know, just talking like with your accent from like your S is right here, like that's like where the Texas accent will come from, and then talking with an S, like where the like the flat of your tongue is touching the roof of your mouth instead of the tip of your, it's like it makes a big difference, and it's really fascinating to watch. And they're like 30-minute videos each, but like it's encapsulating. It's like it's just every accent he goes through and how to talk it. It's really cool.
It's pretty dorky.
Another really good accent video. I'm going to keep going on this because I think it's so fascinating. I'm sorry to turn this one into this, but it's how accents, how like English sounds to, what is it? How English would sound to somebody who doesn't speak English. Essentially, they basically take like the mouth sounds of English and then just using gibberish words, like like that's one of my favorite ones that they do, where she just and then there's another one that just speaks gibberish but with accents, and it's incredibly remarkable and really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, there's a whole science to it. I mean, it's an interesting study for sure. I don't know, I don't think about them too much, like maybe I do. Like, I've been watching Survivor. I mentioned this before.
We talked about that.
And the fun part about Survivor is they have people from so many different places. Come on. You've got people from Boston. You've got people from Kentucky. And it is interesting because, like, somebody talking in one season will remind you. So because it's, you know, you're watching these shows, these seasons in series. You're like, oh, my gosh, the guy reminds me of Kentucky Nick. But they couldn't be, you know, any more different. And, I don't have strong thoughts on this, I guess, but it people can sound the same, but of course, like, they're all very different. So I don't put like a ton of stock in the way that people talk. And I only bring that up, not that I need to be defensive of this, but, you know, some people are just like, when they want to make fun of like a MAGA person, what accent do you think they generally go for?
They probably go for a Southern accent, but right. I don't think that fits the bill.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, that's like something I see in comedy, and I think it's like it's cheap and it's not fair or accurate in any light. So I don't know. Yeah, accents are cool, I guess.
There are MAGA folks from all accents.
Yeah, there sure are.
All
sure
around are. The world.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So a little bit more follow up. On the Twitter cleanup thing, I haven't actually like made any actual progress towards this, but I kind of came up
this is a topic last week where we were talking about purging our Twitter accounts of our past selves.
Well,
that were
specifically
not...
mine. I don't know how much you've been doing, but
not. I mean, I don't have as much to do as you. Yeah. You had. I think we reviewed these numbers last week. Jacob has 10 times the amount of tweets that I have, and we're talking by 10 times the amount. I don't mean 1 to 10. I mean 5,000 to 50,000 or something like that. Maybe even more.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, I'm glad you clarified that because we were talking about, like, you know, cleaning up stuff that, you know, is by modern standards or at least my modern standards not appropriate or not okay. So when you say that I had a lot more to clean up than you did, I just want to make it clear.
Yeah.
It's,
no,
it's
I don't
a
mean,
sheer numbers
I don't
thing.
Mean Jake is a vulgar person, but I will say statistically he's probably more a vulgar person than I am.
Okay. All right. Sure. So I haven't actually made any further progress on this. I haven't deleted any more tweets from the last time that we talked about it. But I've been tossing around this idea. You know, I've been hesitant to just bulk delete everything because there is stuff in there that I think is you know, it's cool to leave. Like, I, you know, there are moments of the past, well, now 10 years of my life on the internet that are documented in 140 or less. And I've been hesitant to just delete all of it, even though I know that's the best course of action because there are so many tweets to go through and so many of them should be gone and only a few of them should stay. I think I'm coming around to the decision that I am just going to bulk delete them because the reason I'm able to even do this using the program that I'm using to go through these old tweets is because Twitter gives me a download of all of these tweets. Like,
I have, so you're saying you have an archive of everything you need.
Yeah, I have them. It doesn't have to be a public archive. Like, nobody's going to, like, the people that would potentially go back and look are probably looking for something incriminating. Like, nobody looks in somebody else's tweet history unless they're trying to find something damaging.
Are you planning on running for president, Jacob?
No, I'm not announcing my bid for 2020. There's a, it's crowded enough. Thank you.
I don't think you'd be. I think you have to be a certain age. I think you can't.
I'm not quite there yet. Yeah,
but I mean, it's never too early to start. You know, just making sure that your life is unimpeachable.
Just in case I run for House. But no, like
I'd vote for you.
It is thank you. That's good to know. At least I have a broader appeal outside the Midwest. It doesn't need to be like a public thing, and it's not like the stuff in there is really all that important anyway. It's probably I haven't even needed to go back and look to see, oh my gosh, when was that day that I traveled to this town and had lunch with that person. You know, I like that's a nice thing to have documented. It's a nice little diary entry, but I've never needed to go back and look at it. And in that way, I think it's probably fine to just have the download. So now that I've gone through and I've wiped out all the nasty keywords and stuff that I've searched for, like I have a relatively clean version of my Twitter history. I think I'll probably just do another download and then pick a cutoff date and delete all of those. I think that's probably just the best way to go about it.
I think that I would like a Twitter feature in which Twitter auto expunges after 30 days.
Unless you archive
it. Yeah. So like you have to, like, if you think something's worth keeping, you have to be the decider. And like, mm-hmm. I guess the replies would kind of get tricky in that respect. Like you would
because people change usernames. They move accounts, they delete accounts, they abandon accounts.
They block people, you know, like, yeah.
Twitter, I don't even think that they've historically done a very good job of keeping the replies together on things after a certain amount of time. Like it may be better now, but there's a ton of stuff, like I said, from like 2012 back.
Yeah, you remember
they
when
just
like
don't connect.
There weren't threads. When threads became like a thing, like you could actually link them? That's like fairly
people
recent.
Were so
like
pissed.
The past 2 or 3 years.
They're like, what's the point? It's supposed to be said in 140 characters. Like, yeah, it still is. You're just at least organizing the same string of tweets that you were going to make.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's essentially, it's just, you know, formalizing something that people were, you know, a loophole people were already using.
And that's us explaining a feature that came into play at least 6 years ago.
The threading? I thought the threading was more than like, was like 3 years ago or so.
They more recently did the thing on twitter.com and in the official Twitter app where they link them together and show them together in the timeline. That's more recent, but they've been doing threading for a while because that's when like the TweetStorm apps were coming out on iOS. Like people were able to, before the app actually did this, you're able
just,
to
like,
actually
upload three tweets.
Yeah. And it would do like the thing where it's like one of three and whatever. And
oh, I always assume people were just doing that manually, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, Patton Oswalt was like the king of that for a while. I remember he would do that all the time.
Man, Twitter, shit. That was someone Twitter did that prompt yesterday, the day before, that was like, what would you tweet your teenage self? And someone was like, hey, in 15 years, there's going to be a service called Twitter that you should definitely never sign up for forever. Pablo Hidalgo is like tweeting it. Like, he's like, first of all, don't panic that your like old, like, you know, 1980s PC is talking to you. That was his tweet to himself. It was great.
Yeah.
Love Twitter. The worst place in the world. Actually, Facebook is worse. Facebook, hot water.
That's so much hot water. Like, continually. Like, just going deeper and deeper. And
God. Hearing about the internal app use revoke. Facebook got their internal apps that are on iOS banned, essentially. Yeah. So now they can't, like, check their lunch menus.
And, like, of course, like, that's not the most important thing that was unusable after the certificates were revoked, but it is like the most funny thing that any journalist could have put in their write-up of the situation.
Yeah, because Facebook is a place where if you work there, you know, you have a cafeteria that probably serves pretty great food, similar to like Google or Apple or something like that, Apple corporate. And thinking about those assholes not being able to just place their orders on their phone ahead of time is just makes me feel so good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the developer's fault. Like the people that are working in the bullpen and, you know, are going to have more difficulty getting lunch that day. I don't necessarily feel great about that, but, you know, they're working for a company which has shown time and time again they are not considerate of people's data, that they are doing sketchy things, and Apple called them on it. And you know, there have been these there's this piece that was written over the past couple of days about how this is a reminder of how much power and control Apple has over our lives. And I think that's like totally unfair. Like, sure, of course they do, but we all buy into that and we trust that. And the only reason that Facebook is feeling Tim Cook's wrath right now is because they broke that. Like they very intentionally went against very clear guidelines as to how these devices are supposed to be used. They're using it to collect data from customers when it's not supposed to be, like, these certificates are not supposed to be used that way. These apps that are issued with these certificates that Apple allows them to have, because they're a very large enterprise company, they have custom rules to prevent this kind of thing, because Apple has this position of power and they have this responsibility to ensure that the devices that they're making are not used for evil, which is what's happening. So I think it's unfair for anybody to be pointing the glove at Apple and saying, like, you're getting too powerful, when you should be glad that the most powerful technology company in the world is looking out for people like us. Because if it wasn't Apple, if it was some other company, like what's that Chinese company that's in a bunch of hot water right now, Hawaii or whatever?
Yeah. Well, like, why if it was are they in a company, hot water? I don't
know. Well, stealing, I think they stole like a bunch of like patent information. There's a bunch of other like tricky stuff. There was a possibility of their devices bugged and, you know, like nasty stuff. If it was a company like that in the same position, they wouldn't pull that plug. In fact, they would probably give them more tools and more license to do the same nasty stuff that Facebook's doing right now. So I think, if anything, we should feel grateful for the fact that we have Apple watching our backs. Like, we have these amazing devices that can do all this awesome stuff, and we can feel more or less secure with the fact that our privacy is going to be, you know, respected. And it's tough to say that during the same week when there's a FaceTime bug that allows people to listen in on other people.
Oh my God. Talk about fuck ups.
That's pretty bad.
You're going to try it out.
Apple
turned it off. Yeah, they pulled the plug that evening.
Did you see, though, that like the person that reported it, Apple told them to make a Apple developer account and file a radar?
Yeah.
That's so bad. Like,
That's typical Apple support.
Do you have to go like full in? Do you have to pay like the $99 for the developer account to file a radar? Like, is that something that you need to do?
I don't know.
I don't either. But I thought that was insane. Like,
do they call like Apple phone support, like some like kid in their bedroom taking phone calls?
I don't know.
Yeah, like, that's pretty typical. That's like a typical response from like a super low level employee, I bet.
Yeah, but it's like
being like, oh, you could go and make like apple.com/feedback, you know, like.
Yeah. Like, that's I do that job, not for Apple. So like I know the lines that are probably fed back, and that's probably a pretty typical one for them. But I would hope that Apple has a channel. And
well,
this is probably what happened. Like, I don't think this person actually signed up for a developer account and put in a radar, and that's how it was found. Like,
well, it's like your what's it called when you had that bug with your thing where you'd like upload the last picture by accident or whatever to the thing. Like, that's like, it's not as bad as, you know, broadcasting audio to an entire group of people, but like
I think it could be worse, like, because it's an actual documented thing.
I can't decide. The situation would dictate whether it's worse or better, but
yeah,
but it
depends
on
where the other iPhone is.
But also, you're not Apple, you know, like you guys aren't Apple, you know, that magnitude, you know, like not as many people use your thing as Apple's thing. So like, it makes more sense that Apple's is much more severe. But yeah, that's an insane bug. And I don't even know how you find that. I don't even like, I was still hazy on what it was. So, I mean, like, if you're listening to this after the fact or you missed the news cycle, the bug is essentially, or was, what was it? You would make a group FaceTime call and then add yourself again into the call a second time. Do I have this right?
I don't know. I actually didn't read that.
Oh, okay. You didn't read it. Okay. So my understanding, I think, from what it is that, so like there would be, I could call you Jacob.
Right.
I mean, I'll call you Jacob, but I'll call your phone via FaceTime. And while I'm calling you via FaceTime audio, I can add somebody, like as if I'm doing like a conference call, and if I add myself again to the chat, for some reason your microphone starts the call.
Okay.
You, unconsenting person who has not even answered the phone yet, is now broadcasting audio to me.
Right. So, like, so before I pick up, you can hear what's going
on
my end.
Yeah, before you pick up a reject or anything, you can just hear it.
Right.
And the one, like, I didn't hear too many stories of like how this played out in real life, but I saw one lawyer sued, like filed a lawsuit against Apple saying that like their deposition was recorded. And I'm like, wait a second. So somebody would have had to know this exploit to do this. Like,
well, that's possible.
Like, well, like, but that,
I mean, it's possible that, I mean, this, the, when did they introduce the group FaceTime? It was only like
September,
within,
November, right?
Well, no, that's when they announced it, but it wasn't available then. If you recall, it took a long time.
It was before the new year. So it's, I mean, it was between, I would say it's between October and, and
this bug November. Has probably and potentially been around for a while. It's possible that,
and
somebody
nobody
else had
said
known.
Anything.
Well, no, like if someone finds out about it and then they're like, oh, ooh, this could be useful for whatever.
I gotta keep this close to my chest. Yeah. That's gotta be that is a, what do you call that in terms of alignment? That is a chaotic evil.
Yes.
I guess. Yeah. Is it chaotic evil? I think it's because they're not following the rules, so it's probably neutral evil, right?
Well, no, I think it's the opposite of lawful evil.
They're not good because they're not doing the right thing, right? And
right,
they're
so
not
they're,
following rules.
They're evil, but they're not following rules. Would, you know, that would fall into line with
but they're not,
lawful
they're
evil.
They're not
but,
telling other people about it because they know the word would get out. That would be chaotic,
so yeah,
I feel like.
No,
would,
yeah,
would be,
so it's neutral evil,
would be,
for sure.
Yeah, I don't know as much about the... I mean, I feel like you do a lot more RPGs than I do, so you probably have some idea.
RPGs. I miss them.
Yeah. Oh, man. I would move to Boston just to play Dungeons and Dragons with my friends.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, you know what? If we end up starting up again, I can let you know. I know that the scheduling might be even more difficult if we toss another person into play and we haven't been able to play for a while. But if my friends and I start up again, even like a smaller campaign, we can let you know. Because we
That's
just do
great.
It. We do it online anyway. Like we all live in different parts of the state or country. So
my MO is just never hitting anything and trying to do stupid shit during the middle of battles. Like I'll be like, all right, I'll sneak around and I'm gonna, you know, scale this wall and get him behind him and then stun him. And then like if I manage to get behind him before the battle's ended, I'll fully miss with my like stunning blow. What was my? I do like the stunning punch or whatever it's called.
Well, you'll fit right in with the team because we already have two rogues.
Well, I'm a monk. I usually play monk.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Just but we play sneaky. Most of us play sneaky. Like, we could use some variability. We don't have a tank. You ever played a tank?
That role is usually filled. I play with a bunch of children, usually. Not literal children, but like a bunch of people who just, you know, take it seriously. I would argue, like someone would say, you're not taking it seriously enough, but I would argue they take it so seriously and they play so to character that, like, you know, like one character that I played with, not my character, but my friend's friend, he basically, if he saw something, he would just try and have sex with it. And so, like, you walk into this dungeon, this room, and it's like, oh, there's a giant obelisk and it's glowing. And he's like, I go over to it and have sex with it. Yeah. I go have sex with it. And the DM's just like, why are you sure you want to do that? He's like, yeah, I know. I just said I'd do it. It's like, okay, roll this. And it's like, okay, you critically hit on that.
Oh,
he just like hurt himself really badly. They'll just like open fire on hordes of armies because they feel like it. They'll start wars between places. It's just like,
that's like that. I mean, that sounds like a bunch of people who probably roll different alignments and they're not paying. They're actually not paying any attention to that. And they're just being seriously, they're taking it very seriously how like silly they're being in the game. And I've played with characters like that too.
I think
it's like,
no
matter what,
they're
just
gonna
do something that's absurd.
Well, I think they play stupid characters. They choose to be stupid and their intelligence to not be that high. And they're like, well, a stupid person would definitely open fire on this like 50 soldier like battle. It's like,
yeah, I think that's a crutch though. Because I've seen people start out the game playing as they should and then fall back on that. For example, actually, a more public example that maybe people listening to this show would know, there's the My Brother and Me spinoff show, Adventure Zone, which is a starts out as a D&D podcast. At the beginning of that saga, Justin's character, Taco, is this like highly intelligent, very considered warlock. And or wizard or whatever his classification is. He's like an elf wizard. Mm-hmm. And I loved his character from the start because like everybody's trying to get their footing and, some of the players are not that experienced. And so it's kind of a rough start. But then as the saga goes on, there's a point where Taco changes and he just becomes like this dunce. And he's just like this super like goofy dunce who has like shining moments, and I think that's what eventually makes his character so great.
Well, do you think that's like in a sitcom, like developing a side character, or do you think that's laziness on the player's part?
I think the character just changed, and maybe I don't know. I can't say I don't know them, but I've seen other people do that, like in the games that I play or the other games that I listen to on podcasts and on YouTube and stuff, where over time characters will become dumber, because I think it's more fun to play somebody who's just going to do something, quote unquote random, LOL. And I don't know. It's fun to have one or two of those. I'd say one character like that in your campaign. If you have more than one, you're kind of, I think it becomes more of a distraction to the campaign and the story that you're trying to craft and the adventure that you're trying to embark on with all these other people who, may be taking it a little more seriously. I think there's a good balance. Like some people don't want to take it too seriously. Some people want to have, a really cool, fun time with their friends. And it's more of like a social thing, where other people are like really invested in their characters and the progress that they're making and the skills that they're learning. Like they're playing it as a game. And I think a healthy mix of that is good. You have to let somebody else play. Like you can't just hog all the airtime, so to speak. And sometimes I feel like characters will devolve to silliness because it's more fun to give them more airtime and more fun for them to play the game than for you to play the game. And I don't know. It's like a tough balance. And I even have to do that sometimes. I have to scale myself back and remember like, oh man, like, okay, I've had like a really good shining moment, or I've had this like really funny interaction with the DM who's playing the shopkeeper character. But that time is done. I need to like back off so that somebody else can enjoy and play the game.
I only get to play maybe like once or twice a year when I go up to Boston to see my friends. Like,
do they just drop you in as like a one-off
character?
Yeah,
they usually take an NPC that they've That's been cool. carrying around with them. And I played over, I guess, summertime, probably end of summer. Yeah, it was pretty warm when I was up there. I can't even remember who I played with. It was like, I mean, it couldn't have been more than like 3 hours, 3-4 hours that we played. And, 4 months later, I'm sitting here in my apartment or maybe I'm at work, I think. And I get a text, and just like, Mike, are you sitting down? And I was like, oh my God. And it's just me and, Chuck and Ben in this group chat. It's like not my regular group chat. And so like, if it's me, Ben and Chuck talking in a group, it's usually about the music we used to play when we were teenagers. Cause we made up the core of a band that in high school, it was just us three. We incorporated mm-hmm. one later, but the person who was missing was Tori, the fourth member of the band. And it's just Ben and Chuck's like, Mike, are you sitting down? I'm like, oh God, oh man, something happened to Tori, or like something happened to somebody. And like, they're telling me somebody from my past is dead, or like something bad is about to happen. I'm like, okay. And they give me like a minute in between each text. So like, and they're not typing or anything like that. So I can't really like, I'm just like, oh my God, what's going on? What's going on? And they're like, Martin of Nazareth is dead.
And I'm like, no.
And it took me like a second to be like, oh, okay. Martin of Nazareth. And I'm trying to remember which campaign this was. Cause I played two campaigns that weekend. I played one and where mm-hmm. I was something. And I can't even tell you who I was. I actually made a new character for that, I think. I think I was just like a paladin, but I crushed. I was a really good paladin too. And they taught me, they're like, I was like, well, how did I die? They're like, a bug bit you. And I was like, what the fuck?
A bug or a bugbear?
A bug bit me. A bugbear? Is that a thing?
Yeah,
no, a bug. Like, they're like, okay, but it was a really big bug. Like, this witch, like, apparently rode a mosquito up to us on, like, some flying machine, and I got attacked by it. And I don't really know the details. They could tell you in immense detail, but you sent me a picture of a bugbear. What the...
Yeah,
oh, it's a thing.
Yeah, no,
no,
these are,
this thing
like...
was a giant mosquito. This okay. The thing that killed me, my Martin of Nazareth, was definitely a giant mosquito, and that was so bad.
That's kind of interesting, though.
It was funny. They treated it with such respect, and they were like, Mike, I know you're really attached to this character, and I couldn't even remember. Like, I think the gist of that, Ben was DMing that one, and the gist of that is that every place that we go to is something to do with, like, sick guitar terminology. And ironically so. Like, Ben is not into guitars. He just thinks it's really funny to, like, name a person, like, Sir Gibson of like, Guitar Center or something like that. You know, like, everybody's names of that. He's a great DM. But, like, and he definitely built the world around those names.
Have
like,
I
Marshall...
Have I shared with you the Bombarded podcast?
Negative. No.
Oh, man. Okay, check this out, because this sounds totally up your alley. Maybe you should share this with Ben, too. It's a musical Dungeons & Dragons adventure that is entirely comprised, like, the entire party is comprised of a band, like a full band of people who play music together professionally, also play D&D together. So they also have, like, all these, like, funny music-based puns. And then at the end of every song, or at certain parts during different... or certain points during each episode, they will play a song together. And, like, they'll write a song on the spot for the episode. It's really cool. And, like, the whole premise of it is that they're at, like, basically, like, a Hogwarts school, but for musicians, like, bards and magical music users. It's kind of neat.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good. I listened to the first couple episodes, and I want to get back into it, but I'm trying to still plow through my old queue, you know, as the eternal struggle of a podcast okay. listener.
Yeah, I've been doing pretty good on mine. I've been clearing my queue every week. It's really, the key is just listening to almost everything on 2x speed.
It is. It's the
which
only
is
way.
Disrespectful in a certain respect, but also integral in actually getting through what you want to get through. Getting the content that you need.
And, you know, some variance is okay. I've been dropping down to 1.5 on a couple shows, and that's fine.
Yeah, like Song Exploder had a really great one. They did Japanese Breakfast this week, and that's obviously, you can't listen to that in double speed.
No.
It really depends how much, if I have like 7 podcasts in the queue, if I have 3 in the queue and I know I have 3 hours to listen that day, then I'll just be on normal speed for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll take my time if I can, but I've been really enjoying Ear Hustle lately. That Radiotopia, the Ear Hustle.
Yeah, but what's the premise?
Oh, the premise is the prison podcast. Did I mention that to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. It's just so good. It's like, it's, you know how like the true crime thing we were talking about, how like I'm not as into the true crime or like the serial killer podcast because I don't like really the glorification of that shit. Mm-hmm. They managed to do prison in like a not sensational way. Like, it's sensational in the fact that they're doing it at all. But, like, it's, you know, Nigel Poor is the lady. She's doing she's, like, one of the producers. And then an inmate is the co-host on this one that also produces and records. It's, like, an inmate-run podcast. And mm-hmm. it's just about, they're, like, they don't do stories about people's sentences. They don't talk about how unfair their system is. It's just about the day-to-day life of being a certain way in prison, like having cellmates, having visitors, having conjugal visits, being gay in prison, being transgender in prison. Like, it's just really, really captivating. And episodes are pretty short, 30 minutes. The sound design is a lot of the sound design is by inmates as well. And... like, it's just such a great... I can't recommend it enough, because it's this aspect of society that is demonized or in, like, media in most respects. And, like, the people that they interview, they just sound like everyday people that you interact with every day. But then every once in a while, they'll be like, oh, he's serving 27 years for murder, for, like, first degree. And you're like, oh, okay. So, like, there's a reason this person is here. They're not saying that it's nice to not have an angle besides documentary, you know, like I would, I like most documentaries have an angle, and that's good, I guess. It's entertaining, but like a documentary, it's like Blue Planet or something like that, you know, except it's prisoners. But it's nice. I mean, that's not a bad pivot to Dannemora, which we've been talking about.
No, it's not. It's a pretty good segue.
Yeah, like, so Dannemora, Escape at Dannemora is a Showtime show that Jake and I have been watching. I finished it probably like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Jake, you finished it recently, right?
Yeah, just the other day.
Cool. And how do you feel about that? I mean, like, are we going to do spoilers? Do you want to talk about it at all, or?
Yeah, no, I do. Like, man, I guess starting with general thoughts, like without spoilers, holy cow. Wow. What a great series.
What a great true story.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like if you haven't seen or heard anything about the show, don't Google it. Like,
yeah, absolutely. The best don't advice that don't you gave read last any episode. Articles. Yeah. Don't Google it. Cause if you do, you'll find out the end.
Right. And which I found out after I Googled it after the end of the show, like I was able to hold out. and I made it through. But wow, really good. I mean, it's just so like reminding myself that Ben Stiller was behind it is it's surprising. It's crazy. Like, I know that he's a very diverse guy and that he's had his hands in a lot of really cool things apart from his, you know, Ben Stiller type comedy, but really, really impressed with the design, the script. Like even the, you know, the title cards every episode are different and they're all perfectly set up. Like those, the shots that they use for the title cards are specifically shot for those title cards. They have to be. So
I just love the wipe. Just, it's like such a, like an old school technique, having that credit roll out like that, where they like a line will shoot across the screen and like Escape at Dannemora will sort of, it'll just like kind of like populate from the center of that thing. It's very like late mid-80s credits kind of thing, like where they just figured out how to animate credits in that manner.
Mm-hmm. And I think the whole thing has sort of like a dated feel. Didn't it kind of feel like it took place a lot further back than it does?
Like, well, yeah, it's like 2014, right? Like the music they're using was a way to place it. Like they use that music as a way to contrast the characters.
They used the pop hits of the season.
Right, and I think it was a really good story device, too, to use those pop hits, because, you know, like, one of the recurring elements is her turning on pop music. Like, I think the first scene of the movie, you have, what's her name? What's the lead actress's name?
Patricia Arquette?
Yeah, Patricia Arquette plays the lead in this. And she says, like, okay, do we want this or pop? Or she, like, basically makes the inmates decide between, you know, pop music or some other type of music. And I think she chose pop or something like that. But it's just, it's like a line drawn in the sand between this lady who wants to be young and beautiful and live life on the edge or whatever, contrasting it with this setting, which is just so, you know, old school. And yeah, it was a nice motif to kind of like come back throughout the whole series, I think. Just that idea of like pop music places you in time, and then it also illustrates, you know, like this lady wants to be young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart, because there's not like it's not even like there's a ton of technology. Usually technology is sort of the indicator of when this took place.
Yeah.
But because it takes place in a prison, any of the technology that you see in the prison is dated, because, you know, the idea
or basic, like a hot plate or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. It's always just like, it's a reminder that the security of this prison and the technology and the resources that they have are limited, because it's a state prison. Like they're not getting the funding that they need. They're not getting the support that they need. So even like the technology in the show, it doesn't help you place anything. And there's not even like a ton of use of cell phones, except for the flash forwards. But if you don't know anything about the story, you don't know when the bulk of the story is supposed to take place. Because the only cell phones that you see are being used by
Luddites,
like Bonnie Hunt's character, you know, like, and that we know takes place at some point in the future, but we don't know how far.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. I was. Did we talk about the framing of the show in that respect, like how they framed it? Yeah, we talked about that.
We talked about that pretty shortly. You know, like they kind of open up on the.
They start at the end.
Right. Yeah,
which is love it or hate it. Not the direct. I guess I mean like it's after
there's a little bit after. There's not much after, but there's a little bit after. Like you know, parts of the story that are still important, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think altogether, without spoiling anything, I thought it was a really fantastic series. Probably one of the best short series that I've ever watched, and I prefer short series over most things, and I think most of the shows that I watch these days and a lot of the stuff that's being made by the, you know, the big studios and stuff, they're going more the BBC, you know, short series method or whatever. It's really good. Like I was super impressed with it all the way through. I thought towards the end that maybe the first part dragged a little bit, but I think it's all important. Like I think the point is that it's supposed to feel like things are taking a long time to develop, because that's the case for the people that are trying to make those things develop. You know, that's the feeling that they have as well. So even the parts that were slow, I thought that slowness really helped tell the story.
Yeah, I think everything about the show is just so well done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I had a complaint about it.
What about actors? Like, were there any standouts? Like, there was a lot of talent in the show, like especially in the lead roles. Like, they're all, you know, pretty well known actors.
What's Patricia Arquette's husband's name in this? Daryl?
Was it Lyle? No. Mitchell?
Lyle, yeah. What was his character? What was that actor's name?
Eric Lang.
What else is he in?
Oh man, I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff. Like he's a character actor. He never has really had a really great opportunity to shine. And he's my pick. Like I think in this whole thing, if there was one actor that really impressed me, it was Eric Lang. His character is unbelievable.
He's incredible. Did you do like a before and after, or not before and after, but like a the real life equivalents? Like, did you look up their pictures and everything afterwards?
Yeah.
Because that was incredible.
Yeah.
Like the transformations and like just that, like he put in like 40 pounds for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like and
then had to lose it.
That accent.
He had to like lose it really quickly, or lose as much that he could for episode 6 when they do a flashback.
Yeah, that was amazing. Oh,
yeah.
God damn. That episode, well, I didn't want to spoil that, because I think a huge component of that episode is that jump that they make.
Mm.
Damn. They had me so, like, do we want to talk spoilers for that episode, or it's
yeah,
not,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, no, we can't. I wanted to make sure that if anybody all wants right. to watch this, and I think they should.
Yeah, definitely.
That we don't spoil anything. So, all right, spoilers, spoilers start about now.
Yeah. So skip ahead. Like, we'll try not to go for like more than 5 minutes in this topic, but like, yeah. But so episode 6 starts out with just kind of this, what do you call it? Like a nondescript, you really don't know what show you're watching, really. It's just like, it's shot in the same way, I guess, but you're just following this cop around on his night shift or whatever. And, cop gets essentially, he gets killed, in a, like a shootout in a parking lot or whatever. And, you know, out of the car comes Paul Dano, one of your leads in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And in the previous episode, episode 5, he has just escaped from prison. And now you're finding him in a parking lot having killed a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And your first instinct
presumably.
Is like... Presumably, yeah, we don't know.
Because he maintains later that he didn't, but...
Right. I mean, he didn't shoot the cop, probably.
Right.
But he did run him over. Based on the footage that we're seeing in the show. So, you know, your thought is that he got out of jail and immediately kills a cop, and you're like, oh my God. And then they fade in with, like, you know, whatever, like 2002 or something like that, which I thought was just like, it was such a good gotcha. Like, it wasn't like a cheap, it didn't feel cheap at all. It was so well earned because of how much time they spent with that cop.
Yeah.
And
well, because they're trying to make it seem as if they broke out and this is happening after they broke out.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And but the thing is, like, I feel like on so many other shows that could have been done cheaply, you know, and I'm trying to think about what would have made it cheap. Like if they had directly, I don't know. I can't say, I couldn't say what would make it cheap, but like, maybe it's the production value. Maybe it's the actors that did it. Maybe it's the cinematography that made it good and not cheap, but like, it just felt really well earned. They spent, you know, like 10, 15 minutes almost before the title card or before that card.
That whole episode is amazing because it's a complete departure from the story. Like it's almost its own standalone, but the role that it plays is that, you know, over the last five episodes, over the last, you know, are these hour long episodes? Longer?
Yeah, about an hour. The last one is like two, I think.
Okay. Almost. So over like the 45. Last 5+ hours, you've been getting to know these characters and you've been, you know, subconsciously forming opinions about these characters. And in my experience, you know, I'm kind of rooting for these guys. Like, I want to see them break out of prison, right? Like, that's why I'm watching a prison break show. I want to see them do it. So I'm like rooting for them. And I want to see it happen. And in this episode, episode six, is, I think it exists to remind you, so close to the end, remind you that these guys did really, really fucked up, terrible, evil things to get into prison, and that they deserve to be there, that they don't deserve to be out. They deserve to be in prison because they did awful shit. I mean, Benicio del Toro dismembered a guy and then just chucked his body parts into a lake. Like
an
like
innocent guy. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like a guy completely innocent nothing. Guy who gave an innocent guy who gave him a chance at a better life, you know, like gave him a good job and like wanted to help him out.
Yeah.
And,
who just helps inmates, you know, like right. former cons, like
so that I think whole episode, just... I'm sorry, I'm almost on this, but like that whole episode like is a reminder that you shouldn't like these characters. And then with Tilly's story, I thought that Tilly kind of had the same thing, except I thought that they were trying to make, I don't know what they were really trying to get across with Tilly in that episode, because throughout the entire series, I was already starting to hate Tilly more and more because I was loving Lyle. You know, Lyle is just like, he's like the ideal husband. Like maybe he's not super ambitious, but he's obviously ridiculously loyal and naive. And he's, you know, coming around to the idea that maybe he's too naive and whatever, but despite all of the things that he's learning over the course of the show, like, Lyle is tried and true. Like, he is there to support this woman, and this woman is just awful. And I guess that episode is just to show you that she's always been that way, and that, yeah, you know, Lyle should have seen that coming. But
I am a terrible person. That was my favorite line of the entire show, just slowly slipping into unconsciousness, going, I am a terrible person. I just say it every day, just for no reason at all. I'll just be like cooking dinner, and I'll just look at her and be like, I am a terrible person.
Yeah, so that was a really cool episode, but yeah, I don't know. Like,
did you read the description on the Showtime app or anything? I guess,
no.
Because I know, yeah, because if you're using the Showtime app, you know, your subscription and everything, you have like a little breakdown, and you know, like some shows will, like Netflix is notorious for just spilling the beans on an episode or something like that, or just like spoiling major plot points of movies or something like that. But Showtime, the way they wrote it was just like, see what, you know, I forget their names. See what were their names? Inmate Sweat and inmate
Matt.
Yeah, so like Matt, and see what like inmates Matt and Sweat are capable of outside of the prison.
Yeah, that's what's on IMDb.
Or like see what their lives are like outside of the prison, which doesn't give you any time that what's going to happen. It was so excellent.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like it didn't spoil it. They didn't need to draw you in. They weren't like, take a look at their past. And you know, like that's like the shitty podcast description that I would write. It was like, take a look at their past. Like see what happened before they went in behind bars. Like. But they just were just very classy, like not. It's like a Mad Men thing. Like Peggy does this, Don learns something new. Like it. That's what they do.
It's stating facts without giving you any sort of context or exposition.
Yeah, I love it. Love it.
It's good. Mm. Yeah, man. I don't know. I don't even know like what else I could spoil. Like, yeah, they get out of prison, and that's like the thing that drives the entire story. And
like, I think the best part about that, like, one thing you could spoil is, like you said, that trajectory. Like, they're trying to make you hate these people by the end of it.
Or remember that you're supposed to hate them. Because I think you come into it, like, knowing, like, all right, these guys are in prison. It's probably for a reason. But then they they get you to know the characters, or at least know the prison version of these characters, because when they leave, that's another story. And that's kind of an interesting thing with Paul Dano, his David Sweat character. Like, once they get out, I think it reaffirms the thoughts that were kind of growing on him the entire time he's in prison, because he's doing all of the work to get them out. It wasn't maybe his idea, but he's doing all the work, and he's like regretting his decision as to bring him along, because he made it out. And they kind of interrogate him at the end of the show too.
Like, I say, like, why didn't you just leave then? He's like, well, it never occurred to me to just leave somebody behind. You know, we're all together in this.
And then she asks, did you believe him? Was he your friend? And he's like, I don't know.
But that's the thing, is like, you never know who your friend is, but you feel like you owe him something. Like, that, did you believe him when he said, you know, no man, like, leave no man behind? You think he was just putting up a front? I believe him personally.
Well, to a degree. Like, he said it never occurred to him to leave, or like, well, is that what he said? Or did he say, I was never going to leave him?
He said those are two different things. He said it never occurred to me that I should leave him.
That's truthful. I think the thought did occur to him more than once, but I think he was never going to go back on what he said. Like, I think the
question happened before when she was asking him, why didn't you escape that night? Like, it never occurred to me to actually just leave then.
Right.
Your perception of Benicio del Toro from the beginning is that he's head honcho, he's tough, he's an artist. You know, there's like so many aspects that they paint you, but I think by the end of it, they need you to, they slowly, it's such a great dynamic character in the sense that you slowly come to realize that this dude is an idiot. He's a fuck up idiot.
He's a fuck up idiot, but also a psychopath.
He's a psychopathic, fuck up, stupid idiot.
Yeah.
Like, who, like, you know, just, you know, murders people or whatever. But like, but for the first five episodes, you know, you're seeing a man with a plan, and you want to believe that, like, oh, he's like seducing Tilly for some reason. He's doing this and that. He's like letting her in on this because he really thinks it. And then, you know, once you see him in the flashback, you're like, oh, he's really stupid. And he killed this guy for no reason.
And he's a drunk, and like,
he's an alcoholic, and then in the last episode, like, it's totally earned his departure, his falling apart, like, what do you call that, he has his breakdown as like a human, where he just starts drinking again while on the lam, like, that is totally earned.
Oh,
like,
because
I feel like,
because
without
his
plan
isn't going into effect. Like, he wanted to go to Mexico, which was totally unrealistic.
Yeah, totally. Like, and Sweat had the right idea. But like, if they hadn't done the flashback episode, first of all, it's integral to the show. So like, there's no way they couldn't have done that. But if they hadn't put it there, to go from that like self-assured, like, confident, you know, mastermind that they're presenting him for the first five episodes, and then to have him just be a bumbling, you know, idiot with diarrhea by the end of the show, like, it would have been way less believable. But to know his past, that like 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, this dude was, you know, just crazy looking for some cash and killed an old man on a rumor because of it, like,
yeah,
and then dismembered the body and threw it into
that was the thing, like, that
it
wasn't just that he killed the guy and then they left him, you know, they just like they basically buried his body underneath a bunch of like old railroad ties, but he went back, he didn't even have to, he went back and dismembered his body and chucked it in the lake. Like, there's part of his ego, like, there's a petulance about him that it's like he has to, I don't know. Like, he's a psychopath.
You can't pick up on it at first, though.
Yeah.
You couldn't, like, that's the thing, is like, you couldn't pick up on that petulance or like that immaturity. Like the whole time you hear, like, you want to believe that Sweat is the naive one. Mm-hmm. You want to believe that because he's younger and he's learning how to paint. You know, they definitely have this kind of like seesaw thing going on throughout the whole show, where like, you know, the wise inmate is like taking the little one under his wing. And
but Paul Dano, secretly, he's just like the most capable dude.
Well, right, and that's what he learns throughout the whole thing. And if he had just realized that sooner, you know, like, he may not have ever found the escape route, but he, once it was shown to him, he just did it. That's the thing, though, is like, listening to they touch on breakouts very briefly in Ear Hustle, And one of the things, what they talked to one guy who did break out, not out of San Quentin, but out of another prison, I think. And he basically says the one reason that nobody ever gets out successfully is because they tell somebody else. And so, like, a second you're loose lips, you know, like sink ships in this sense, like that, like as soon as you tell somebody else, they have to be in on it, or they're going to tell somebody when you disappear, like they're going to be interrogated or something bad is going to happen to them. So just don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And like bringing Tilly in was like this, like you want to believe that Benicio del Toro has a plan here, and he might have one, but it's so half baked, but he presents it.
And she's such a wild card.
Yeah, and he presents it with the confidence of someone that that is not half baked.
Yeah,
like I feel like sitting at home, like watching him do that to her. Like, I guess they never could have gotten the supplies without her.
There are aspects of it that they could have never done without her, but I don't know. I mean, he kept that thing going after they really after they had what they needed. Yeah.
Like she gave him enough hacksaws and everything like that. Man, what a great show.
The thing I just kept thinking about, and I think, you know, they leave it off with this when they're doing the interview with inmate Sweat in the hospital bed, is they basically gave him the statistics as to how far he made it with the guy and then how far he made it without him.
Oh my God. That's what I was saying that to Aaron. I turned to Aaron. I was like, they're only this many miles. We actually did the map. And
Like at the beginning when they looked, they're like, it's like 25 miles.
Yeah. He's like, we're 25 miles from the border. I think if you looked at a map, they were a little bit more than 25 miles from a border, but
of course you can't go as the crow flies. So,
right. Well, that's the thing is like, I was, you know, talking to Aaron while we're watching this. I'm like, I have friends that would hike like 20 miles a day, you know, like on certain days, like, and they illustrate that beautifully. Like, how far did he make it with Benicio del Toro? Like,
they made it 18 miles in
2 weeks or something like that. Or
yeah.
Was it? Yeah. It was a long amount. Like, basically, I can't imagine traveling that few miles a day.
I know. And then when he goes on his own, he makes it 21 miles in 2 days.
Yeah. That was crazy. Insane. Oh, man.
Yeah.
What a fascinating thing that whole show was. But it's like a really well done Prison Break movie.
Yeah.
Not Prison Break show.
I like that one moment when he's on his own and Sweat, he's up in that like deer stand and he looks out and he sees all those red lights and like he knows that they found him, and then he falls asleep. Like, he's just so like exhausted by the whole thing that he just falls asleep despite the fact that he's completely surrounded. And then he wakes up and he realizes he's not surrounded, that those were lights from like the windmills or whatever, and that gives him a sense of relief, and that bolsters his confidence, and to the point where he just, like, what timing, you know, like to get picked up the way that he did. And I don't know how like true to life that part of the story was, but to, you know, like wait in the woods and then walk across the street and go through this field where you were literally on the border of Canada. You were within sight of Canada, and then to have a cop roll by and just say, "Hey, what are you doing?" Like, what are the chances, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh man. And then I followed that show up with Sharp Objects, which I still recommend that you try.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd like to.
You're still doing Survivor though.
Yeah. Well, actually, we found a method, an actual like tried and true method for watching Survivor. Cause people who get into the show, you know, like, where do you start? Do you go all the way back to the beginning? Cause there's a bunch of seasons that you don't necessarily need to watch. And there's a couple seasons you really want to watch, but you can only watch those seasons if you watch these other seasons, because this season is comprised completely of like second timers or third timers from these seasons. So you want to like know the story of those characters, or, you know, these players prior to the All-Star season, for example. So we found a guide on Reddit, on the Survivor Reddit, as like the best way to watch Survivor. And it gives you like, okay, if you want to watch these seasons, this is the path that you need to watch, which is super useful. And, you know, you wouldn't be able to decide for yourself unless you had somebody who was like a fan of the show make that for you, because you need to know what characters are where, and you don't want to spoil yourself, because you can't even Google anybody's name while you're watching the show to find out, like, wait, what did this person do for a living? Like, where are they from? You want to Google that, but you can't, because if the season's already over with, you'll be able to find out right away if they're the winner or when they got voted out. It'll be in like their bio on Google. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can still watch Sharp Objects on my own. It's probably not something May would want to watch. She's not real big on those dramas, but we're watching Survivor together now, so it's sort of a different thing.
I don't know what to do anymore. I beat Spider-Man.
Oh, you did? Did you 100% it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't platinum it because there's like too many little things, like swinging around. Like you have to like fall a certain amount of distance or whatever. So like, I don't feel like just climbing buildings and jumping off repeatedly to hit those benchmarks. But the story's all done, all the unlocked, everything's unlocked that I can unlock. All the side missions are done, all the little one-off things. I still have some photos to take, but that's really it. But it's like to the point where like, yeah, there's really nothing else fun that's going to happen in that game.
Yeah, you've played it through. Now it's time to get on Kingdom Hearts, right?
No, I'm going to wait till it goes on sale. I hate that game so much that we've talked about my hate for that game, like how I despise Kingdom Hearts, but I will always play it.
Well, I would actually argue the opposite. I haven't done this for myself, so take that for what you will, but I think you should just buy the big deluxe package that has everything in it. It's a great deal. You're going to end up spending more money than if you just bought the third game, but you'd get the third game plus everything else, like everything else for $100. I think it's a pretty good deal.
What's everything else though?
One and two, like the final mixes of all of those, as well as...
I have no desire to play any Kingdom Hearts game again. No, I'm over replaying those games. I played each of them twice. Birth by Sleep 3 times, if you look at it a certain way.
Sure.
And then Dream Drop Distance is also like another like play it twice kind of game.
Yeah.
365 over 2, that was bad also. I don't know. I'm just like, I need to get it done with. And I heard that they wrap up the story in Kingdom Hearts 3. So,
oh, well, I hadn't heard that. So, thanks.
Well, you can cut this out of the podcast, then you can unhear it.